Anybody have anything from Brahma Samhita to discuss, or a verse that we should read? 34.
Vayoratapi manaso munipungavana. So pyastiyat praparasimnya vichintya tatve govindamari purushang tamahang pachami.
Pantaha, the path to but kotishata, thousands of millions, vatsara of years, sampragamyaha, extending over, vayoho of wind, atha api or manasaha of the mind, munipungavanam of the foremost jnanis, saha that path, api only, asti is, yat of whom, prapada of the toe, simni to the tip, avichintya tattve beyond material conception, govindam govinda adipurusham the original person, tam him aham I pajami worship. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, only the tip of the toe of whose lotus feet is approached by the yogis who aspire after the transcendental and betake themselves to pranayama by drilling the respiration, or by the jnanis who try to find out the non-differentiated Brahman by the process of elimination of the mundane extending over thousands of millions of years. Purport. The attainment of the lotus feet of Govinda consists in the realization of unalloyed devotion. The Kaivalya, realized non-alternative state, which is attained by the Ashtanga Yogis, by practicing trance for thousands of millions of years, and the state of merging into the non-differentiated impersonality of Godhead beyond the range of limitation attained by non-dualists after a similar period, passing in distinguishing between the spiritual and non-spiritual, and eliminating things of the limited sphere one after another by the formula not this, not that, are simply the outskirts of the lotus feet of Krishna and not the lotus feet themselves. The long and the short of the matter is this. Kaivalya, or merging into the Brahman, constitutes the line of demarcation between the world of limitation and the transcendental world. For unless we step beyond them, we can have no taste of the variegatedness of the transcendental sphere. These conditions are the simple absence of misery arising from mundane affinity, but are not real happiness or felicity. If the absence of misery be called a bit of pleasure, then also that bit is very small and of no consequence. It is not sufficient to destroy the condition of materiality. But the real gain to the jiva is his eternal existence in his self-realized state. This can be attained only by the grace of unalloyed devotion, which is essentially chit or transcendental in character. For this end, abstract and uninteresting mental speculation is of no avail. That's quite a good one. So, there are so many different processes of, you know, religion and self-realization and spiritual realization and knowledge, and many of them are atheistic. They're not devotional by nature. They don't involve an interpersonal relationship of an I and thou relationship of an individual and another person. And nevertheless, people, transcendentalists, do betake themselves to different processes. Excuse me. Of meditation and sense control and philosophical inquiry to help themselves distinguish that which is not real from that which is real, that which is not eternal from that which is eternal, that which is not substantial from that which is substantial, can recognize that the fleeting, changing material manifestations, which are always in flux, are not the absolute truth. And this is not only a process of, you know, abstract speculation and philosophical discussions, but it actually goes to the way they actually live their lives and control their minds and engage their minds through breathing techniques and other techniques, so that they can actually come to a state of realization that's different. It's popular in the modern universities to have people talk about knowledge in different ways, mathematics. The concept of knowledge has really changed in modern times. That people think, you know, you can be a professor and speak about so many things, but you don't really have to change the way you live. You can still be addicted to liquor and coffee and cigarettes and all those things, and it doesn't affect you. But that's not knowledge, right? The process of knowledge is described by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, including these things like humility, pridelessness, tolerance, detachment from hearth and home, perception of the evils of birth, death, old age, and disease, study of the Vedas, acceptance of a bona fide spiritual master, and Krishna includes devotion to him, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But some of these different processes, spiritual processes, different classes of transcendentalists, there are the best of the sages, the munis, who are great at, you know, deeply understanding the distinction between spirit and matter. There are yogis who are very good at able to sit and concentrate and restrain their senses from their objects and keep their senses under control. And they attain to states of realization that enable them to become free from material attachments. And in a kind of bliss known as Brahmananda, which is being described here in the purport as freedom from material misery. It's this stage of Brahman realization, of realizing that which is beyond any material designations, that which is not temporary, it's not divisible, it doesn't have any material qualities, it's free from the threefold modes of nature. It's just pure consciousness without any variety. That is a state that's considered much happier than sensual happiness that we get from, you know, temporarily. You know, you taste something nice while you're eating it, you're thinking, oh, now I'm enjoying. But then later it causes you misery, you know, indigestion, or you want to eat it again, you don't have it and you can't afford it or whatever. These sources of misery, the enjoyment of the senses is described in Bhagavad Gita as the sources of misery. What's the verse? Yehi sangsparsha ja bhoga dukhayonaya evate adyantavanta konteya nateshu ramate buddhaha. Because these so-called pleasures have a beginning and an end, and they also have some other reaction. So those who are wise, who understand the processes of karma and the processes of how the psyche works and what matter is and so forth, they don't delight in material sense enjoyment. And nevertheless, as Lord Brahma is reciting in this verse, that's not devotional service. That Brahman realization is far inferior to devotional service, and it's not through that Brahman realization that one can actually attain the lotus feet of Govinda. So those transcendentalists are described as, you know, attaining only the tip of the toe of his lotus feet, the very beginning of spiritual life. And the actual entry into the active service in a personal way in the transcendental varieties of the spiritual world is described as being millions of times more blissful than the impersonal bliss of Brahmananda. it's full of rasa, it's full of this emotional, spiritual emotional exchanges, which are not like material emotional exchanges, although they may look like similar things. Krishna is dancing with girls in the forest, and we may hanker after dancing with girls in the nightclub or something like that. But it's a completely different kind of dancing. It's a completely different kind of exchange of friendship and personal relationship. It's full of bliss, and it doesn't have all the bad qualities that the and degrading qualities that the interactions of, you know, illicit dating and so forth has in this modern society. So, but it's full of this very great, powerful, ecstatic bliss. And that's the real self-realization, to understand who you are in relationship to Krishna in that active devotional service is actual self-realization. And simply understanding, I'm not this body, I am spirit, I, you know, Atma is Brahman, Tattvamasi, you know, I took a class when I was in college. I was very, very young. I think it was before I became a devotee. I was like 15, 16 years old. And I took a class on Asian history or something like that. I forget what it was. I remember the professor's name was Noblock. Somehow I remember that. And they were talking to us about Chinese religion and Confucianism and stuff, and they were talking about Hinduism. And the main thing in Hinduism was to understand, I am Brahman, you know, Atma. What is the Atma? The Atma is Brahman. But there's more than that, Prabhupada says. You have to know how to act as Brahman. Brahman is active, actually. It's not passive. So, and that activity is service to Krishna, devotional service, bhakti. And otherwise, just identifying oneself with Brahman and not with the material body or material false ego identity is still described as the last snare of Maya. One may think, oh, now I've become self-realized. I realize that I am one with everything. Yes, all right, but you still haven't made it because you're still inactive. You have to find out what your active service to Krishna is. Jivera Swarupa Hoy Krishnera Nitya Das. This is the teaching of Lord Chaitanya and of all the Vaishnava Acharyas. So Lord Brahma is describing that. So it's this beautiful verse and purport that the yogis and jnanis who are very, very accomplished transcendentalists, after millions of years of becoming perfect in their practice and millions of lifetimes of taking up this process again and again and again, you know, when they finally achieve the perfection of their processes of spiritual knowledge, they've only approached the tip of the toe of Krishna's lotus feet. And to become completely successful, they have to achieve the grace of a pure devotee, that divine grace by which one can then actually engage in devotional service. And that's explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam in many places. Yes?
Towards the end of the purport, it states, and I'll explain my thoughts on it in a second, for this end, abstract and uninteresting mental speculation is of no avail. And how it pertains to this verse, I've had thoughts on recently. Just to give you a little background of my thought, I work in the medical field, I work with patients, but I'm not a licensed doctor. I see patients all the time that have conditions, who have something that I've seen many, many times. I could, with almost all certainty, say what it is, but I'm not the authorized source. And so basically, for me to tell somebody something is speculation. People come to me all the time and ask me for my advice, and I have to very creatively tell them my thoughts without giving them a diagnosis, without giving them the truth about their condition. I have to be able to give them information that is not misleading, but at the same time, you know, lets them know that there is another source that they need to obtain to ask. They have to ask the doctor. And in spiritual life, I encounter that a lot of the time too. People want to ask questions, or they'll have an argument about their understanding of God. They have an argument about the absolute. A good example is talking to a lot of people of Christian faith. They have very deep set ideas about God, about how to obtain God. And as I can see it, a lot of it is in the mode of goodness. A lot of it is a very, if not, you know, passion, goodness, that they have aspirations to serve God. It's just, it's not going about the right way. And if I'm in discussion with them, a lot of the times I feel like I'm not authorized to give them the best answer. But my question is, if I'm talking to somebody who I believe a lot of Christians are kind of in this mode of trying to obtain, like, almost a brahminical state, they want to accept God into their heart, and then they want to, as far as I understand, a lot of them want to merge into this happy family state with God. They have very, a lot of them have very little personal connection to who God is. They have kind of this fuzzy, vague understanding that He is the ultimate. But most of them don't even know within their religion, like, any names of God, any qualities of God, any love from God. They know He's love, but they can't really give much example of why He's beautiful, why He's attractive. And so for me to talk to them, kind of on their own level, like I talk to patients, without giving them the exact like diagnosis, like if they came to a bona fide spiritual master, I in a way have to kind of speculate or put it in their terms. Like a lot of the times what I'll explain to them is, you know, try to explain the soul in very remedial terms so that they have an understanding how the soul wasn't just created when we were born back in 1980 or 19 whenever, that God just spun it out of nowhere, and that He has decided that it's going to either go to this damnation if they don't serve Him, or they'll come and merge with Him. And so a lot of the times I feel like I have to speculate in that I'm putting it in terms that they'll understand. And is that a proper way of addressing these issues, of trying to bring them to a slightly higher knowledge, or maybe give them a taste of the fact that there is something more than just this kind of Brahman realization that they want to have?
Well, we should understand the difference between speculating and repeating what we've heard, although we may not have perfect realization of it. And for example, what I think this is being used here, that this can be attained only by the grace of unalloyed devotion, which is essentially chit or transcendental character. For this end, abstract and uninteresting mental speculation is of no avail. Mental speculation of philosophical jnanis in terms of trying to understand the absolute truth and not the absolute truth may bring them to the point of impersonal realization, but not beyond that point to devotional service. For that, one needs to contact a devotee and hear about the pastimes of Krishna and be engaged in service. But I like your point about, you know, being not a doctor and therefore being limited professionally by what you're allowed to tell people. And that we have that idea that those who are the real doctors, the spiritual masters who actually have realization, and they practice well, they know the science well, they can cite to the medical treatises and so forth, they actually can experience the bliss of devotional service. And they know properly how to treat the patients. They're the authorized physicians, so to speak. This is analogy of physician. It's there in the Bible too. Physician, heal thyself. And This is and it's there in the Lord Chaitanya says, "I brought the medicine to cure the disease from which you're suffering, the disease of Maya." But I think that when you're talking to people, when you're out on Sankirtan and you're talking to people, when we're talking to people, we try to, as best as we can, we try to explain them exactly what we've heard from the authorized saints and authorities who really have pure realization, and from the scriptures, and we've been pointed in the direction of the very best of the best scriptures, the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, Nectar of Devotion, Nectar of Instruction, Chaitanya Charitamrita, the books that really explain Krishna consciousness by the great devotees. And so we are not speculating as long as we're trying to not invent something new ourselves, but to actually explain what we've heard from those scriptures and maybe try to explain it properly according to the audience that we're speaking to. But it's not speculation, because what you're trying to do is, you know, you're like an apprentice. You're not a doctor, but you're studying to be a doctor in a way. You're trying to explain what you've learned from the doctor, but to bring in a real authority is someone who really knows, like Srila Prabhupada can see Krishna as perfect realization, and so he's not just repeating something he heard, which wouldn't have this much force, but he's repeating something that he completely and thoroughly understands. But it's also the same thing that he has heard, so that it's not, he's emphasizing, I'm not inventing anything new, it's authorized, this is just how all the acharyas have been saying it, it's just how the Srimad Bhagavatam says it, Shukadeva Goswami said it, the six Goswamis said it, Lord Chaitanya said it, Krishnadas Kaviraj said it, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said it, and now I'm saying the same thing to you, I'm saying it in this way. So, but even among saintly persons, indicated in this verse, even among those who have different kinds of realization, some may have different opinions about different things, we can understand that. But 4 out of 5 doctors recommend Krishna consciousness, because the spiritual world is full of pure devotees, actually.
I'd just like to kind of ask then too, as far as it's saying, you know, abstract and uninteresting mental, I think a lot of the time when I'm out on Sankirtan or talking to people in general, because actually in the same setting I have a lot of patients who will then see that I, you know, live my life very spiritually. I have, you know, the holy names in my office. I have images of Krishna. I have pictures of my Gurudev. People have questions. I have a Shika, which a lot of people want to ask about. And then they have very abstract, to me, uninteresting questions. But they're very deeply rooted in these people's hearts, as what you know, their ultimate goal is, what their ultimate understanding is. And coming from a Christian faith, I understand that. Like, I had so many questions on why am I here? Why would God want to do this or that? And I feel being that unauthorized position, but knowing that there are authorized positions and wanting them to seek that out, I think sometimes I feel like I'm speculating, not in a negative way and not even just repeating, but since some of the questions and some of the ideas are so abstract, I have to almost make like an educated guess as to something that they will understand so that they may go and seek it from an authorized source.
You shouldn't be afraid to admit that, you know, especially when someone's asking some really obscure question, you know, you shouldn't be afraid to admit that I don't really know the answer to that one. That, you know, I could refer to the back to the doctor, back to the medical books, back to the treatises, back to the other authorities. So you shouldn't be afraid to admit that. But I think one of the senses here, which I'm also getting from your discussion, which is an important thing, is we can sit and argue about things. It's like Srila Prabhupada would say, you know, you could lick the outside of the bottle of honey, but you still wouldn't know what the honey would taste like. Or as George Harrison says in the introduction to Krishna book, The proof of the pudding is in the eating. So, you know, people from different... this is the age of Kali, and people are... They tend to dispute things all the time and join up into different factions, and the different factions say, you know, no, my side has to win, no, my side has to win. And they're talking about all these things. But Krishna consciousness is not like that. It's not just an argument. It's not just a philosophical debate. It's something that we can actually experience in private, you know, in our japa time when we're alone with our mind, struggling with our mind to get our mind to control our mind and senses, get them to engage in devotional service. It's something we live in our lives, whether we profess it or not. We do profess it because Srila Prabhupada is a preacher, and he founded this movement, and he said, preaching is the essence. I just read something Satyaraj wrote on Facebook, where he wrote a nice little concise thing, said something like the Sankirtan... I wish I could... I'm not quoting it right, but he said, you know, the Sankirtan idea, or something like that. The Sankirtan idea is that... we can't really taste Krishna consciousness without sharing it with others. I'm not quoting it right. He wrote something much more profound than that. But the idea is that to really understand Krishna's name, form, and so forth, we have to actually share Krishna consciousness with others. This is Lord Chaitanya's movement. It's Lord Chaitanya's mood. It's the service he's asked us to do. We have to be servants, and we have to, you know, just like any servant, we have to know what our master wants and do what our master wants. And what Srila Prabhupada wants is, it's our monthly Sankirtan festival, and we know what Srila Prabhupada wants and what Vaisheshika wants is for us to distribute books and to reach people and engage them in chanting Hare Krishna. But it's not simply a matter like, you know, our team is going to win the debate. We have the greatest philosophers, Jiva Goswami, treatises on explaining everything and analyzing things very well in detail, analyzing the scriptures. Six Goswamis scrutinizingly studied all the revealed scriptures and took the essence and presented them in special books, many of which we're not even really qualified to read. But it's not a matter of, you know, an argument, disputation, doctrine, you know, winning by logic and proving out there's an inconsistency in your opponent's position. That would be very dry. But it's really a matter of actually falling in love with Krishna and doing things for Krishna and thinking of him and having your mind become detached from material concerns and becoming fixed in, you know, very peacefully, very purely outside of material things, fixed in spiritual things, so that you attain that state of fearlessness, of bliss, of clarity, of freedom from material engagements and affections. And the mind is always accepting and rejecting things, sankalpa vikalpa, you know, but this is yoga. So we're practicing a kind of yoga, bhakti yoga, which really involves, you know, the total dedication of one's mind, one's house, manasa, deho, geho, one's body, everything, mind, body, words, everything at the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. So it's not an argument. But no, don't be afraid to say, you know, I'm not sure of the answer to that question. I tell people, you know, I'm still a beginner, and they say, well, how long have you been doing it? Oh, you know, about 25 years or whatever it is, 35 years, right? 35 years. And then they think, oh, you know, then it's too hard or something. Well, it's not. It's just I don't do it very well. You know, it's worth, you know, anything worth actually becoming perfect at, you know, you know, it's worth spending more than one lifetime, you know, becoming perfect. This is something really, you know, really, it's the only thing really worthwhile. And there's nothing else to do. There's nothing else worthwhile trying for. So, yeah, 1976 was 34 years ago. is when I first shaved up and joined and lived in a temple and stuff. But still, I'm still barely scratching the surface of what it really means to be a real devotee. And so a lot of stuff, a lot of my knowledge is just theoretical. But even the talking about it, you know, with faithful devotees is part of the process. And that's part of what we're doing. And if so, don't be afraid to say, I don't really know the answer to that, but I'll go ask the doctor and get back to you. Just like you have to do, you know, in the hospital. You can't, you know, I can't prescribe you a drug, or I can't give you a diagnosis. Yes, Shraddha.
Prabhuji, I had a question on from here where it says that. I lost the line there. So basically, it was saying that people feel happy. The Brahmanand is because of lack of misery is the kind of anand that they feel. But then it says that is not sufficient to destroy the condition of materiality. So this means that the soul still has hankering for material enjoyment. And that's why the soul falls down. Why does the soul fall down from a Brahma Jyoti?
The intelligence is still not pure. That Srila Prabhupada used to quote that verse all the time. It goes, Ye nye ravindaksha vimuktamaninas toyasta bhavad avishudha buddhaya ahruhya krichtrena purang padang tato padantyato anadrita yusmadangrayaha. So Lord Brahma is praying that those who may think themselves liberated, but who have not accepted the shelter of Krishna's lotus feet through active devotional service, still have impure intelligence, and therefore they fall down again. They may not be in touch with the modes of material nature, but they have something. Actually, we have as jivas. Is our real identity is by nature active. And we won't be fully satisfied to remain in an inactive state as simply realizing I have nothing to do with forms, names, qualities, activities, and stuff. That's just the negative side. We have nothing to do with material forms, names, qualities, and activities. But those are reflections. Srila Prabhupada points out in the 15th chapter, you know, how the Lord Krishna says there is a tree with its roots up and its branches down. And Srila Prabhupada says, where do we see a tree with its roots up and its branches down? We see it in a reflection. That means there's a real tree somewhere else. This is just the reflected tree, the upside down tree, but there's a real tree somewhere else. And in the old Bhagavad Gita's, there was a painting. Srila Prabhupada directed Jadurani and some of the other artists to make certain paintings. And they were very like these instructive paintings that you could just look, because some people just get things graphically better than actually by verbally, you know. And there's a picture of a tree being reflected in water, and the water is identified as desire, you know, material desire. So those who are sitting on this line of demarcation, as it's described here, the Kaivalya emerging into Brahman constitutes the line of demarcation between the world of limitation and the transcendental world. And so those who are situated on this line of demarcation between the material world and the spiritual world are simply experiencing the absence of misery arising from mundane affinity, and that feels like a great relief compared to struggling with mundane affinity and always having this flickering happiness with this fear that it will be taken away, and this experience from time to time of misery. So it seems like, well, this is happiness. But that happiness is described by Lord Chaitanya. It's like just the water in the footprint of a calf compared to the ocean of happiness experienced by those who actually plunge into active devotional service.
So, Prabhuji, when the soul merges into the Brahman, does it also carry the subtle body with it, like the mind and intelligence, or is it the spiritual intelligence which is still a little bit?
Yeah, when in this in the Brahman, there's no material mind and material intelligence. Those are creations. Those are material elements that are created, you know, like the elements in their nascent state, you know, before they were conglomerated, right? There's material elements that are created within the creation of the material world. The material world is made of different stuff. You know, just like we have the periodical table of elements and they've examined, you know, different elements of chemistry and stuff like that. So in an earlier state, other philosophers, you know, talked in Greek philosophy, they talked about fire, water, air, and these different conceptions of elements. We shouldn't consider that this is like some primitive, you know, pre-scientific idea of the elements, but this is a different kind of science that really explains consciousness and matter more thoroughly and completely. And in that science, it's described how the mind is created. It's called Sankhya. And the mind is created by the interaction of the false ego with the mode of material goodness. And the intelligence is created by the interaction of the false ego with the mode of passion. And then when the false ego interacting with the mode of ignorance takes place, there's this whole development from subtle to gross of ether, fire, air, water, earth. In connection with also the senses and the objects of senses, you know, that is flavor and fragrance and form and so forth. So this is all this is explained elaborately in the Srimad Bhagavatam by Lord Kapila Dev, how this is all created. So the material intelligence and the material mind are also elements of material nature, and they're not present in the Brahma Jyoti. But the soul, the soul being active by nature, what those impersonalists don't understand is, the soul has its own. It has its own senses, and it has its own mind, and its own intelligence, and its own, and all these things have played out in the world of Satchidananda, the Ladini Shakti, the Sangvit Shakti, and the. Tatastha means the jivas that can be covered because they're small. Now there's Sandhini. Sandhini is the existence of the spiritual world. Sangvid is the cognizance of the spiritual world, and Hadini is the pleasure in the spiritual world.
And so, Prabhuji, after the soul falls down from the Brahma Jyoti, what does it do? Does it start engaging in devotional service, or could it also then get into material world again?
If it engages in devotional service, it doesn't fall down. It becomes perfect. But if you mean after the if someone from the Brahman realization decides to somehow or another misuses its independence as trying to become the enjoyer of the material world again, then it takes a kind of body within the 8,400,000 species of life. I have read that Srila Prabhupada described that impersonalists, interestingly enough, impersonalists, because of their inactivity and things, they take bodies of things like trees and non-moving living entities because they're I read Srila Prabhupada say that. Of course, if they're impersonalist yogis and they're very intelligent, you know, they take birth, they're sages, and they'll take birth again as sages until they come. But if someone falls down being an impersonalist let me say, like I should have told Jonathan, I have to admit that I don't know in detail. but I have heard Srila Prabhupada say that, you know, those who are too attracted to impersonalism, they want to be like a stone with no will, then they can become born as living entities, non-moving living entities, and have to go up through all these 8 million species of life. But any little devotional service that one does, that is eternal. It doesn't have to be created and destroyed. And that will carry on, and it will save you from the most dangerous type of fear. So that Srila Prabhupada told us that even if you just take prasadam, even without knowing it, you won't, your next life you won't be born as an animal. You'll get to be born as a human.
Is the most dangerous type of fear? What fear is that?
To be born again as an animal.
As an animal? Okay.
Or a plant. You know, below the human species. That Prabhupada says that in the purport.
After someone reaches the Brahman realization and is situated in that platform, it seems to me that it's very unfair that there is no ladder from there to go back to the spiritual world, because they already tried so hard to come to that platform, and then they are there, and why isn't there, you know, some process or some kind of preaching or whatever it is,
yeah,
for them to go back to actual place?
Oh, there is. It's not that there's no ladder. In fact, Lord Chaitanya, took initiation in the Bharati, you know, in the Shankaracharya Sampradaya, and he went to Banaras and spoke to the Mayavadis and converted them all. But it may be harder for them because they're already accomplished within their own tradition, and they may be a little proud also, especially if you perform something that you have to be very austere, you know, and they see devotional service seems too easy almost. And they may be proud, and it may be difficult for us to reach them. But actually, if someone is already detached from material enjoyment and accustomed to controlling the senses, and you know, is a lot of the people you hear that spout Mayavadi philosophy these days, they aren't really self-controlled. Often, they use Mayavadi philosophy as an excuse to not have to follow the rules and regulations set forth by God, because after all, a lot of times they don't like to hear about God. There's the demoniac tendency, shastra vidhim utsrijya. They want to disregard the regulations of the scriptures, and so they've heard some Mayavadi philosophy, and they can say, but you know, it's wrong to think that Krishna's really a person with desires and rules that he wants us to follow. Really, you know, it's just a symbol that we are also Krishna, and we, you know, I mean, they say this nonsense. You meet them on book distribution all the time, and sometimes they use it as an excuse to be immoral. You know, especially in hippie tradition, with, you know, Western New Agey tradition, there's this kind of sense that you know, of irresponsibility. It's mode of ignorance, really. The rules don't matter, and we don't have anything we have to do, and nothing is real, and there's nothing to get hung about. Strawberry fields forever. So there is a ladder. There is a ladder. We've had many examples, like we see the four Kumaras. They were impersonalists, and they became devotees. There are other examples. Shukadev Goswami was already, Hare Krishna, welcome. Shukadev Goswami was already fixed in self-realization before he learned the Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, the sages were asking him, Suta Goswami, why would he bother? If he's already self-realized, then why would he bother to undergo studying this very difficult literature, you know, and this lengthy subject matter, Purana, and then this verse came out, you know, that Atma Ramash Chimunayo Nirgranta Hipyarukrame. So, but there, it's not that impersonalists can't become devotees. They can become devotees, and people in impersonal realization can become devotees. They have to meet a devotee and get mercy from a devotee. But, as with all of us, the danger is always there that if we're too proud of our own accomplishments, we won't take the mercy of a devotee. We'll neglect him. What is he? Like Srila Prabhupada was translating one song about the mercy of Lord Nityananda. He was talking about someone may think, you know, who is this Nityananda? What can he do for me? You know, why should I? I don't care. Why should I pay any attention? So that problem may be there among people who are even accomplished transcendentalists in some other field. And we meet them on book distribution too. Somebody may be practicing mystic yoga, and they can do all the postures well, and they can think very well, and they'll say, why do I need, I remember I met one guy, I met him 2 years in a row, and he was like, you know, why are you trying to sell me, you Hare Krishnas, you're always trying to sell me something, but these are really good books, you should really, you know. He says, I know Krishna, I'm an accomplished meditator, I have a picture of Krishna in my, well, I live with very simply, I just have a little, practically a little cubicle that I live in, and I meditate for hours every day, and I see a picture of Krishna in my wall. And I say, well, if you see Krishna on your wall, don't you want to hear more about the activities of Krishna and his friends and how he exchanges love with his devotees? And the guy just couldn't just relate to that. And I thought to myself, oh, I'm being too pushy. I want to make him buy something. And that's why he's seeing that you, Hare Krishna, you're motivated. You want my money. You want to sell me something, you know. So I thought the next year he came by and did the same thing. You know, he's feeling very superior to the Hare Krishnas. And he did the same thing. And I thought, this time I'll be very, very careful. And I'll say, oh, you know. And I said something about, you know, we have this tradition where part of the way we meditate on Krishna is that we sit and we hear someone who has realization recite, you know, stories about Krishna. And these books are the concentrated, you know, recitation of the stories about Krishna and his qualities, just like you see his form on the wall, and it's part of your meditation. So you can also hear about other things about him, and that's here in these books, and the person who's speaking is writing these books is a great devotee of Krishna. And, you know, I tried in a very more mellow way. I'm not trying to force you to buy anything, but I want you to understand that we respect your tradition. We have this other tradition, which is also valuable. But it was the same thing. He just, his mood was just to feel superior and to denigrate what we were doing as inferior. It was really So yeah, it's not that people who have impersonal realization cannot become devotees. They can become devotees, but they, like anyone else, they have to be humble. And if they can, like Srila Prabhupada often said, if you have many, many zeros and you put a one in front of it, it's very valuable. And, you know, often he said that in terms of material accomplishments, that, you know, that if you have great wealth, great education, great fame, great beauty, all these things, if you're not using them in devotional service, then they're just useless anyway. They're a waste of time. They're zero. But if you have those things and you become a devotee and use them in devotional service, oh, then it's like putting one in front of all those zeros. You know, you have 100 zeros, so now you have this giant number, one with 100 zeros after it, you know. And the same thing could be said for those who actually have, spiritual accomplishments of sense control and deep understanding of, you know, the way material nature works and karma works and all that thing. But if they're not devotees, then if they become devotees, they'll become very advanced devotees very quickly. And they, you know, like, think of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. You know, he was an impersonalist, and then Lord Chaitanya delivered him to devotional service, and then he became such a powerful devotee. And he was so tired of the kind of philosophical, you know, he was a professor with thousands of disciples, really, a professor of impersonalist Vedanta, and, you know, very expert in Sanskrit. You know, he could compose Sanskrit poetry like the, I mean, it was like really like his first language to him, you know. But then when he became a devotee of Lord Chaitanya, he felt that all his, you know, dry argumentative disputation was just like dry cakes with no oil in them, you know, and it's just like, you know, it could not palatable compared to the drinking nectar of, you know, discussing Krishna's pastimes with the devotees. But to the impersonalists, sometimes they can't distinguish what the devotees are doing. Seems to them, well, you're telling stories, you know, you're sitting around, you know, singing songs and telling stories, that's what everybody else is doing. They're going to the movie theaters, they're going to read, you know, mystery novels and things like that, and you're reading novels, you know, what's the difference? Whereas I'm doing something, you know, I live in the forest and I eat only one meal a day, and it's, you know, I can tell you it's only made out of roots and they're raw and they don't taste very good, and you know, I've accomplished, I've done so many, I've done this so much austerity that, you know, how can I look up to, you know, people who just sit around and tell stories and get emotional and cry and you know, and stuff like that. So that pride is always dangerous for all of us. We should get accomplishments, you know, like we sing this verse about how they tell their mantra suktas by gaining the appropriate thrones, conveyances, and ornaments. We need bodies surcharged with spiritual emotions to be able to do devotional service, and we need accomplishments to offer to Krishna. But the danger is that when we get these accomplishments, if we become proud of them and we think, oh, this is something that I have and that other person doesn't have and stuff, therefore Lord Chaitanya, and then we can't do devotional service in that mood. Therefore Lord Chaitanya says, if we can be humble like the grass and tolerant like the tree, then we can chant Hare Krishna all the time with great, you know, in the proper mood. But if we start thinking of who we are, how great we are and how austere we are, and, you know, we wake up every morning very early and we take a cold bath, and some of those other devotees, they put warm water in their bath, and, you know, then, you know, we start to think of ourselves as being great, and we won't be able to chant very well for ourselves, nor will we be very, very able to attract other people to chanting very well.
My question
last,
is more,
last question, because we should move along.
Yeah. Actually, it's the same question, but maybe I didn't ask that question properly. So my question is more about, and you quoted the example of Sukadeva Goswami and others who are realize the impersonal, but those, they still have bodies and they're still acting in this world with their bodies. So my question is about those who have already realized impersonal Brahman, but they no longer have the bodies. They're just in the merged into the Brahman. And we say that they fall down. So my question is there any way for them to go up instead of falling down? Or is falling down is the only one way?
I have to do like like Jonathan and say, I don't really know. But they have to get the mercy of the devotees. That I know. That they can't simply just fall up. They have to become dedicated. I mean, we're jivas. So somehow or another, we have to become dedicated to serving Krishna and dedicating everything to serving Krishna. And that's how we enter the spiritual world. So they have to somehow or another hear from a devotee or from Krishna himself. In other words, the spiritual world has to reach out to them, right? We're saved by grace, not by works, right? It's not, you know, so we can't reach up to the spiritual world. We have to be the recipients of mercy, of someone being able to describe devotional service to us and showing us how it's performed. So those who are not embodied, I don't know whether, you know, some percentage of them just it must carry on. And this goes back to these whole interminable questions of, did we ever fall from the spiritual world, or were we first created on the line of demarcation and all that stuff? And Srila Prabhupada, I think, has very firmly told us not to waste our time disputing all those things. We know that Krishna is very merciful, and he's coming in all species of life to recall and reclaim the fallen souls, to reestablish dharma, to show mercy to devotees. So it's not, we shouldn't worry that, you know, somehow Krishna has arranged the world in such a way that there's some injustice for those who have, after millions of lifetimes of good impersonalist practice, have actually come to the point of impersonalist realization. But even the point of impersonalist realization has nothing positive to recommend it. And that's the position that's attained by demons when Krishna kills them, who are opposed to Krishna and who are harassing Krishna's devotees and doing everything against Krishna. And then he kills them, and they become, and then even they get impersonal realization, so liberation. So it's not that it has something positive to recommend it, but rather it has the absence of material attachment. It has the absence of false identification like that. And so we shouldn't worry too much about whether there's some injustice for those who are merged in the Brahma Jyoti. We know that Krishna comes and extends himself to all species of life, and there may be some way that he extends himself to those who are by dint of their being in the Brahma Jyoti, not being actively engaged in devotional service, not having any material bodies. But we should understand that at least for those who are merged, like in the state of deep sleep, like after the... I'll tell you one thing that I heard. There's a place in the Chaitanya Charitamrita where Lord Chaitanya is talking to Haridas Thakur, and Haridas Thakur is describing the glories of the holy name. And Lord Chaitanya said, well, that's fine for the human beings. They chant the holy name and they get, love of Krishna. But what about the non-moving living entities, the trees, and what about the animals and those who can't chant? And Haridas Thakur said, my Lord, don't worry. The holy name is so powerful that even those who are nearby, when devotees are chanting, they get purified and they also go back to Godhead. Then Lord Chaitanya had a different doubt, and he said, then the world will become vacant. Everybody in the universe will be delivered by the Sankirtan, and there won't be anyone else left in the material universes. And Haridas Thakur said, my Lord, you don't have to worry about that either, because there's an unlimited stock of jivas that are in ignorance, that are just waiting to come out and get a chance to be active and get liberated. So you don't have to worry about that too. So after the annihilation, everybody's staying within the body of Mahavishnu, and they need to come out and get bodies and get activities and things, so that they can have an opportunity to meet devotees and join the Sankirtan. So now today is beginning of Kartik, so we're going to chant the Damodar Ashtakam.